Hello, everybody. Dr. Ben Edwards here. Welcome to another episode of You're the Cure. We are excited to have a guest on our show today. And yes, we are still talking COVID. I keep telling my wife, I'm going to move on. We've talked enough about it. The truth is out there. People who have ears to hear and eyes to see can see and hear and discern and find the truth. It's out there. That's the beautiful thing. A lot of alternative media has popped up in the past year, year and a half. But this is one topic we haven't really covered. I'm getting inundated with emails, phone calls, texts daily from desperate family members whose loved ones are in the hospital. And the family members have done some of their own research, which is another beautiful thing about alternative media and the internet. Patients can get online and go to PubMed and look some stuff up, and they can go to trusted resources who rely on scientific, evidence-based medicine. And the loved ones or the patient can request certain therapies. And some physicians honor that request and some don't, and a lot of hospitals aren't. And there's a certain protocol being used. And that's the daily email I get. My loved one's on this certain protocol. It appears to not be working. We want to do a different protocol. Doc, can you do anything? And of course, there's not much I can do. I'm not in the hospital, don't have privileges. So it's a very, very difficult situation. And so we're going to talk about the hospital protocol and specifically one particular drug on that protocol with today's guest, who I think I can just introduce him as the remdesivir expert, Dr. Brian Artis. Some of y'all may have seen Dr. Artis around because he's been making the rounds for a little bit now, trying to educate the public on the pros and cons. And like we tell every patient that comes to our clinic, first, our duty is to teach. That was Sir William Osler, the founder of Johns Hopkins Medical School, the founder of modern medicine, said the first duty of the physician is to teach the masses not to take medication. Secondly, we believe our goal is to teach our patients that diet and lifestyle are at the root of all this inflammatory disease and put you at risk for not only cancer, heart disease, and Alzheimer's, but COVID-19. So we need to address diet and lifestyle. But the other thing we like to point out to these patients is they're in charge. They're the boss. They're paying me for this consultation to give them an opinion. And it's just that, an opinion, but ultimately the patient's sovereign and in charge. And this doctor-patient relationship is sacred. And the definition of evidence-based medicine, I quote it almost every show now, there's three parts to that definition. The best published data in combination with the clinician's experience, and then ultimately the patient's values. And patient values trump clinical experience. Clinical experience trumps the published data. That's the definition of evidence-based medicine by Sackett back in 2000. We need to remember that in this conversation we're about to have with Dr. Artis. I think we need to frame it with that understanding of the true definition of evidence-based medicine. Okay, Dr. Brian Artis, welcome to the show, sir. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be on your show. You gave me a list of all the people you've interviewed before, so your audience has been introduced to some very high power, highly intellectual, very influential and should be listened to guests, which I love.
Well, thank you. We've been honored to have some amazing guests on, especially during the COVID crisis. And I would put you right there with them. Especially lately, I've seen you on a lot of different shows, a lot of different interviews. And so I want to say thank you. Number one, you're obviously passionate about getting this piece of information out in particular, so people can make a true informed decision and have true informed consent. So if you don't mind, Dr. Artis, share with us how you first started looking, why and how, what were the circumstances around looking at this remdesivir?
Yeah, so early in May 2020, I actually had these alerts come up on my phone from like different news outlets. And in the middle of May, there was this alert that came up that said, today marks the single highest amount of deaths in one day in the United States of America for COVID-19 patients, and that record of one day of deaths was the highest recorded day of deaths of all countries. And I remember looking at those alerts and I was like, wait, we live in America, why are there so many people dying in this great United States healthcare system from COVID-19 more than any other country? It just didn't make any sense. So I actually wanted to know, what are they treating patients with? But before that, I wanted to know, what were they saying in the media? So I was clicking those news alerts and seeing these press conferences of medical doctors and hospital administrators in New York who were bringing to light everything that they were now experiencing early on in this pandemic, treating all the thousands of people in New York that had COVID-19. And this is what I heard in every press release over a couple hours I was listening to, multiple. It was, we've never seen this happen before. When we start treating a respiratory virus, is what they were reporting. And they said that within the third and fourth, fifth day, we're seeing acute renal failure. But we've never seen a respiratory virus ever behave that way and attack the kidneys to cause acute kidney failure. In New York, they all pleaded, we not only are short on ventilators to help these COVID-19 infected patients breathe, we don't have enough dialysis machines to treat all of this acute renal failure. Now, this is what got my attention. I knew the medical doctors and the hospital administrators were being very ethical and honest and sincere when they said, we've treated lots of respiratory viruses in the past. We've never seen one attack the kidneys like this. And that's because that doesn't typically happen. It's never really happened in history. So they were very honest when they were saying this. But what rang very true to me was, is when they were saying by day 3, 4, and 5, we're seeing such severe acute renal failure, we need dialysis machines. And the reason why this got my attention is because 3 months earlier, before COVID reached the states, especially in Texas, it wasn't here. My father-in-law, first week of February 2020, walked into a hospital with fever and headache. They diagnosed him on day 1 with the flu. Day 2, they called us to say now he had pneumonia after they started treatment. Day 3, they called us and told us he was in acute renal failure. By day 5, we were called and we were told the renal failure was so intense. He was now going in and out of consciousness and being put on a mask to force oxygen air into his lungs, is what we were told. And that's when I went up there to the hospital for the first time, only to find out on the morning of the 6th, he actually was not positive for influenza A or B. They did not find that on the first day. They actually never did a sputum test to determine if he had bacterial or viral pneumonia, but it was negative for both on day 1 when they tested it. So I asked him to show me the actual x-rays from day 2, only to see that he actually didn't have what looked like pneumonia. It looked like a straight line of water in the lower left lung on day 2. And the doctor points at it and goes, that's the pneumonia we found on day 2. And I said, pneumonia has a distribution. It looks like cauliflower all throughout the lung fields. That is not what pneumonia looks like. That looks like pulmonary edema, water filling up in the lungs that they said on day 3 he had acute renal failure. And that would make sense. If you shut down the kidneys and the body's retaining water, because he's on a saline bag, that the body's abdomen fills up with water, which his felt like a waterbed by day 6. It was huge, 20 pounds of water in his belly. That water goes up around the heart, sitting inside the pericardium or tendinous sac your heart sits inside of. Then it has to filter into your lungs. And these people literally were drowning my father-in-law to death. Also to find out that he was on vancomycin, which is an antibiotic that treats only bacteria. But that was a part of a hospital protocol they put him on since day 1. Now I knew vancomycin was ill-advised to be given to him with a flu diagnosis, and over the next 6 days was causing acute renal failure that even a second attending medical doctor admitted to me 2 hours later when she walked in the room. I said, you need to get him off that vancomycin right now. I already asked the earlier one to do it. And she looked at the bag without ever talking to me and goes like this. We could take him off of that. It actually causes acute kidney failure. And I said, this is day 6. You've known that this whole time, but you called me 3 days ago to tell me he's now in acute kidney failure. Now, over the next 3 days, they had me kicked out of the hospital because I was calling them out on every ill-advised portion of this hospital protocol. They kicked me out, said they would only talk to my wife's family as direct descendants. And they actually convinced my wife's family that it's best that they just follow the hospital protocols as they've been doing. And over the next 3 days, then ended up convincing the family to put him on a morphine drip and let him pass peacefully, which, if anybody knows what morphine does, you overdose somebody on morphine over a 2 to 4 hour period like they did with him, it paralyzes your diaphragm, you can't breathe, paralyzes the heart, and the heart stops. This is how they get away with actually killing people in hospitals. So this is what they did to my father-in-law. Remember, this is now 3 months later in May 2020. I'm listening to these MDs on TV reporting from New York that by day 3, we're seeing such severe acute renal failure, we don't have enough dialysis machines. Now, this rang just as true to the experience I had 3 months earlier, where I got a phone call on day three saying my father-in-law was now in acute kidney failure. And that was because of a known drug that does that called vancomycin. They actually reference it in hospitals as being vancomycin. Anyway, I just wanted to know that that's what got my attention. And I actually thought that vancomycin must have been a part of the treatment protocol for COVID-19. But I didn't know. So I actually went to the CDC.gov's website to find out, are they using vancomycin? And CDC.gov's, I wanted to know what's the mandated treatment protocol in hospitals. And it actually said on the CDC.gov's website, for treatment of COVID-19, we have adopted the NIH.gov's mandated protocol for COVID-19 hospitalized patients. Hyperlink here. So I clicked it, took me to NIH.gov's website. Remember, this is in early May 2020. And I go to the website, and it's a memo on NIH.gov's website of Anthony Fauci, and he is stating there is just one drug and one drug only that we're going to use in all hospitals throughout America for seriously ill COVID-19 patients. And that drug, this experimental drug is what it's called, is called remdesivir. And there's two studies Anthony Fauci related or had quoted as showing safety and efficacy against the Ebola virus in Africa a year earlier in a trial, and then a second study where he said it was found safe and efficacious for COVID-19 patients in a cohort study of 53 patients by Gilead, who owns the patents of remdesivir. So he goes on to, in the same memo, he puts down and says, you're not allowed to use hydroxychloroquine in hospitals for COVID-19. It's found to cause heart disease and death in COVID-19 infected patients. And then chloroquine also was not allowed. This was the only three things on that memo. And I remember looking at it going, I've never even heard of remdesivir, but I know hydroxychloroquine's been FDA approved, safe and effective at certain doses for 70 years. So what is so miraculous about this remdesivir? But I was shocked to not see vancomycin on the list. I was like, okay, well, isn't that drug? So let's just look and see. He had hyperlinked both of the studies he was referencing against the Ebola virus that he said it was shown to be safe and effective, remdesivir. So I clicked it. I'm actually holding the study right now in my hand. It's actually called, titled on the New England Journal of Medicine, A Randomized Controlled Trial of Ebola Virus Disease Therapeutics. And anybody can look it up still today. I clicked the actual study to read the study. In this study, there was four experimental drugs given out to four regions of Africa when the Ebola virus breakout was going on between 2018 and 19. This study was published in December 2019, which is only 5 months before Anthony Fauci's mandated memo on May 1st, 2020 was on NIH.gov's website. So I'm reading the study to find out these four drugs, remdesivir, ZMAP, which was put into the study of Ebola by our United States Department of Health and Human Services. That's who financed ZMAP, which is a monoclonal antibody drug, experimental. Then another drug called MAB114, a single monoclonal antibody that was put in by our defense contract group called DARPA, our United States government, put in ZMAP, I'm sorry, MAB114, monoclonal antibody. Then there was a fourth drug called Regeneron, which you're hearing about right now in the media, is a triple monoclonal antibody that they're suggesting in some states, like in Florida, we should try to use this as a early treatment for COVID-19. So as you go through the study, there's a safety board assigned to review the data as they're pumping this drug into people for a year in Africa. I couldn't believe it, Doc. Halfway through the study in August 2019, the safety board is reviewing all the data of all the people that have been given these four drugs, experimental drugs, to all the people in Africa. Remdesivir at this point was found to have a 54% mortality rate. So everybody they gave the drug to, over half of the people died while being on the drug treatment. ZMAP, the drug put in by our Health and Human Services Department of the United States government, it killed 49% of all people that they found. At least that was the mortality rate. Now, the safety board said because ZMAP had a 49% death rate and remdesivir had a 53%+ death rate, they pulled those two drugs from the study and were not allowing any other African people to be given the drugs. And the moment I saw that, I was like, wait a minute, Anthony Fauci just said it was proven safe and efficacious against Ebola virus. Why would he say that when it didn't even make it to the end of the trial? It was pulled for being the most deadly or the worst at actually helping prevent Ebola virus death or infection. Now, this is what's interesting. In that study, there's a chart, table 2, and it actually shows you the mortality rates of all 4 drugs. There was no control group in the study. All participants were given 1 of 4 drugs, and they just compared them to each other. Well, the monoclonal antibody that DARPA put in there, called MAB114, it was found all the way to the end of the trial to have a death rate of 35% mortality rate, which is better than ZMAP and remdesivir at 53%+. The Regeneron drug that you're hearing about now in the media as a monoclonal antibody treatment for COVID-19, in that experimental trial, Regeneron had a mortality rate of 33% of all people they gave it to. Now, this is my problem as a whole. Number one, Anthony Fauci knew remdesivir was the most dangerous in that study. And then he chose that same drug 4.5 months later after that study was published. He chose the highest killing drug or least successful drug at helping Ebola patients in that trial as the one he was going to select to use on all Americans. You know what else was disturbing? I knew Anthony Fauci was lying and was not being honest about remdesivir being proven to be safe and effective, because the NIH and the division called Allergies and Infectious Disease, NIAID, which is Anthony Fauci's department at the NIH, was the single largest financier and supporter of that entire study in Ebola patients. So he would have had all of this information for the last 2 years per the trial after it's been published now into the COVID-19 pandemic, and he still picked the most dangerous one. I wanted to know why he would do that. I had a problem with that. I didn't like him choosing this one and lying to people that it was proven to be safe and effective when it was not. So then I went back and I clicked the other study he was referencing on the NIH.gov's website, and it was a study done by Gilead, the maker and owners of, it's called Gilead Sciences, the manufacturer and patent owner of remdesivir. And there was a study done on 53 COVID-19 positive patients in March 2020, 2 months before Anthony Fauci said, this is going to be the drug we're going to use, and it was proven safe in this study also. The 53 patients came from Japan, Canada, and America. And Gilead gave all of them remdesivir for just 10 days. COVID-19 infected people. I couldn't believe the results of that study. The results were 23% of everybody they gave the drug to within 10 days had multiple organ failure, acute kidney failure, septic shock, and hypotension. Another 8% of everybody they gave the drug to had multiple organ failure and such severe acute renal failure, they had to be taken off the drug by day 5 because they were dying. You add up those 2 numbers, that's 31% of everybody they gave that drug to within 10 days or less experienced multiple organ failure, acute kidney failure. And this is when it hit me. All of a sudden, I realized he chose a drug found to kill or have a high death rate, the highest death rate in the Ebola study, and it was pulled from the study that he funded, by the way, and was overseeing. He knew remdesivir was pulled. There was 3 other drugs he could have picked from that trial that had lower mortality rates that I could have then maybe justified. Oh, but at least he picked one that was better. No, he picked the most deadly one. And what was being reported in the media in New York, they were saying, we've never seen a virus do this before. Since the time we start treating this drug within day 3, 4, and 5, we're seeing such severe acute kidney failure from this virus that we need more dialysis machines here. I then realized all of a sudden from these 2 studies he was quoting, 1, he lied about it being safe and effective in the Ebola trial. 2, he knew that it caused severe acute renal failure within 5 to 10 days for 31% of all people you give it to. And this is exactly what the doctors were reporting. We've never seen a virus do this before. No kidding. You've never used this drug before either, because it's never been FDA approved before the pandemic ever. So this is why I got in the media, was to warn everybody that Anthony Fauci has selected a drug to mandate in all ICUs in America. In the same memo, then Anthony Fauci requested to the federal government that our federal government buys all of the stock of remdesivir. And we are going to be the only country to use remdesivir to treat COVID-19. And he requests that until the end of 2020. Now, this is what's disgusting to me. At the end of 2020, America had 550,000 dead Americans, supposedly, from COVID-19. Where did the majority of these people die? In ICUs. What were they all being treated with? Remdesivir. What was the only country doing that? Ours. What drug was proven to be deadly in 31% or cause multiple organ failure in 31% of all people you gave it to that had COVID-19? Remdesivir. What drug today, a year and a half later almost, is still the mandated drug in ICUs across America? Remdesivir. How many are dead now? 680,000 Americans in ICUs being treated with what? Remdesivir. This drug is super dangerous, super deadly. This is why we still in America have the highest death rates or death numbers of COVID-19, supposedly COVID-19 patients. It is my honest observational opinion. Every single medical record I have been sent and every death certificate I have been sent, which is by the thousands over the last several months since April. I don't know why in April this turned around, but everybody started seeing my videos, I guess. I have been sent every day now, every day, medical records and death certificates of people in ICUs. Do you want to know what they read? Death from COVID-19 is number one. Number two is acute renal failure is the reason for death. Number three, COVID pneumonia. And I've been screaming in the media since May 2020. It is not pneumonia that's killing these people. It is acute kidney failure caused by remdesivir poisoning. The body's retaining water, and that water is getting mixed in the lungs of these people. That's called pulmonary edema. That water is now getting mixed and saturated with any mucus in the lungs that possibly could be there from pneumonia or the cytokine storm of the infection. You have mucus and you add water. You want to know why all these people are being vented? There's no place for oxygen to get into your blood inside your lungs. You're drowning these people to death. And I've been saying that since May 2020. Now, since then, I know I'm just rolling here. Are you okay with me just rolling here, Doc?
Roll with it.
Okay, now what's really disturbing to me is I've been pumping this out since May 2020. And what was really disturbing is recently I actually found that France decided 5 months later after that May mandate and memo from Anthony Fauci to the whole America that this is the only drug you're going to use. France decided in September, remember, they said no, Anthony Fauci asked our federal government to not share the drug with anybody else until the end of 2020. And it was actually, he said, don't release it to anybody else until after October 2020. So the 1st of November, then you can share it with other countries. Well, by then we already had over 450,000 Americans dead. And we set the stage for this being the deadliest virus ever for the American narrative. That's what they were trying to set up. And, but France, in September of 2020, France decided they wanted to see about this remdesivir drug because they thought that its benefits were questionable. But they knew America was the one using it the most and the only one using it. So they actually did a trial, a little case study with five COVID-19 patients. Five. And the actual hospital was called Bichat Claude Bernard University Hospital in Paris, France. And this was done in September 2020. And I couldn't believe what I read. So they have five COVID-19 patients. They treat them with remdesivir in France. And this is what they found. They were going to give their patients 14 days of remdesivir treatment was the actual protocol they were going to do. And this is what was found. Remdesivir was interrupted before the initially planned duration in four of the five patients. So they had to stop the treatment early in four of the five patients. Two of them because of alanine aminotransferase elevations, and ALT is the abbreviation you see on like a CBC or a blood panel. This is elevations of liver enzymes. But what they found in two of the five people was two had such high liver enzyme elevations that they were 3 to 5 times the normal range since before they were evaluated, before they started remdesivir. So their levels had gone up 3 to 5 times within a few days. Two more of the five people had to be taken off the drug because renal failure required kidney transplants.
Oh, my word.
So 4 of the 5 had to be taken off the drug prematurely because liver failure and acute kidney failure occurred, to where they needed transplants. Now, this reads exactly the same as the results of the cohort study of Gilead Sciences, when they found, when they gave remdesivir to 53 COVID-19 patients in March 2020, that there was 31% of all of them had multiple organ failure and acute kidney failure. 8% had it in 5 days or less. All right, so their actual conclusion is, this case series highlights the complexity of remdesivir use in such critically ill patients. Just so you know, in that 14-day window, 2 of the 5 died. So those percentages are not really that good. But this was France. France decided they weren't going to use remdesivir, obviously, from this little 5-part case series, and they did not like the results from remdesivir. Now, fast forward now, Doc. We're now looking 5 months ago from today. We're in September 2021. There was actually a review, and it's actually published. It is titled Remdesivir and Acute Renal Failure, a Potential Safety Signal from Disproportionality Analysis of the World Health Organization's Safety Database. So now you've got a group of individuals who are going to do a review of the World Health Organization's databases on remdesivir and acute renal failure combined. Okay? And this is what they found. This is called, they did what's called a reporting odds ratio. And what they wanted to do was compare now after a year and a half of treatments for COVID-19 around the world. They wanted to compare the number of acute renal failure or acute kidney failure. Renal means kidney. They are looking for the number of acute kidney failure cases reported with remdesivir with those reported with other drugs prescribed to COVID-19 diseased peoples in comparable situations of COVID-19 around the world, who are also being treated with a drug called hydroxychloroquine, and then one called tocilizumab, T-O-C-I-L-I-Z-U-M-A-B, and lopinavir. There was 4 drugs, remdesivir compared to hydroxychloroquine, tocilizumab, and lopinavir, that have been used around the world to treat COVID-19 for the same amount of sickness people with COVID-19. And this is what they found when they did a search for terms acute renal failure and remdesivir. They found that yielded a statistically significant disproportionality signal, and this is what it was. The reporting odds ratio of acute renal failure with remdesivir, Doc, was 20-fold that of comparative drugs, including hydroxychloroquine. They then goes on to say, we detected a statistically significant pharmacovigilant signal, meaning pharmaceutical drugs correlated signal of nephrotoxicity or kidney toxicity associated with remdesivir. This is deserving a thorough qualitative assessment of all available data. Assessments of patients with COVID-19 renal failure should prevail before and during treatment with remdesivir in COVID-19 patients. Now, I cannot tell you or your audience how many thousands, I get thousands of emails. You mentioned it earlier when you started this broadcast. Thousands of people email me directly to tell me exactly the same story that's happening to their loved ones and the deterioration once they start their remdesivir treatment in hospitals for their COVID-19 ill patients. The moment they put them on remdesivir, by day 2, 3, 4, all of them are reporting renal failure, having to be vented. And this is because of the same scenario I experienced with my father-in-law, which was vancomycin poisoning causing acute kidney failure, saturating his lungs with water, and they're doing the same thing by the thousands every day. Right now we stand in 16 months since May of 2020, when this mandate went out by Anthony Fauci. We now have 680,000 confirmed COVID-19 deaths supposedly in America. They all died in ICUs. I mean, maybe it's 99% of all those numbers died in ICUs, but it doesn't even matter. Yeah. Every ICU is using one drug, remdesivir, and it's proven to be deadly and cause acute kidney failure. Yeah. And when I say they're sending me their medical reports and postmortem death certificates, it lists complications of COVID-19. Number 1, acute renal failure. Number 2, secondary COVID pneumonia. I just want to ask you, if you have mucus in your lungs from the initial stage of pneumonia from an infection or the cytokine storm that comes along with SARS-CoV-2 that we know about in the beginning, Do you think it would be beneficial, Doc, to shut down their kidneys and add water to that organ? I don't think there's any benefit to mixing mucus and adding water retention to the lungs. That's never helped anybody survive.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. What an amazing and unfortunate and really horrible, horrid tale. And I want to remind everybody, this remdesivir is under emergency use authorization. Similar to the COVID gene therapy shots. And these emergency use authorization announcements are prohibited if there are known effective treatments. And I want to quote real quick from a study. This is August of 2005. The Journal of Virology, August 22nd, 2005. The name of the article, chloroquine, is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. That was in 2005. And of course, that was for SARS-CoV-1. But you can go to HCQ, C19, HCQ.com, 281 trials, over 4,500 scientists, over 400,000 patients. 44 of those trials are randomized and controlled. There's a mountain of evidence on hydroxychloroquine, and there was evidence before SARS-CoV-2 even hit. There's and ivermectin is a whole other story. You can go to C19ivermectin.com and see a whole slew of patient or of studies there too. 63 different studies. I think 31 of those are randomized control. My point is, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin have been around forever, 40 years to 70 years. Their safety profile is well established, and there's some evidence, as opposed to the evidence that Dr. Artis has just quoted on remdesivir. Just compare the evidence side by side on these drugs. I mean, I think we can all come to the same conclusion. Dr. Artis, we got to take a break. We're at the bottom of the hour here, but when I come back, I'll let you, I think you might have had a comment there, so I'll let you comment, but also I'm going to have a question. And it's always follow the money. So when we get back, we're going to have to continue this discussion. We're with Dr. Brian Artis. Dr. Artis, where's the best way for people to follow you and stay in touch with what you're doing?
Well, all the information that I'm even quoting here and all the documents I've sent out since May 2020 to try to educate people, you can get access to those at thedrartisshow.com. thedrartisshow.com. So doctor is just the abbreviation DR. Thedrartisshow.com. If you put in an email, I actually send you all of a 67-page COVID-19 document I've created and a 20-page research-backed disease prevention cocktail of nutrients that are proven to protect every cell in the body of oxidative stress, which spike proteins, viruses, poisons, all these have to take the same action to damage our cells. And this is my way to try to thwart the agenda to injure or hurt so many people.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for all you're doing, the part you're playing to educate and support and help to establish health in people. It's awesome. So when we get back, we'll continue with Dr. Brian Artis talking remdesivir, and we will get into some other things too. I'm Ben Edwards. You're the Cure. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Dr. Brian Artis. You can check him out at thedrartisshow.com. Is that right, Dr. Artis?
That is correct.
Okay. thedrartisshow.com. Y'all go check that out. Get everything he's quoted, all the studies he was quoting, all that information. That's the second most voluminous email I get is, send me all the slides and studies and everything you're quoting all the time. So thank you for putting that together for people. So who owns remdesivir? Who owns the patent? Who developed it?
I do. It's called Gilead Sciences, and there's four large corporations that own Gilead Sciences. Two of them are Vanguard and BlackRock. I'm off the top of my head, I can't actually quote the other two, but there's four large corporations that are the majority owners of that company.
Interesting. Those two
and
names
George Soros and George Soros, whose name keeps getting popped up everywhere, is the major investor in all four of those companies, or one of the major investors. It's pretty wild.
Yeah,
these names keep coming up.
Yeah, well, when I go doing a little bit of hunting, which I don't have a lot of time to hunt around, but when I hunt for who owns Google and YouTube and Facebook and all the media basically, and the pharmaceutical companies, almost anything you look at, this Vanguard, BlackRock continues to pop up. Very interesting.
I know they're everywhere.
Okay, so I think we've laid a pretty good case here, foundation for this emergency youth authorization should probably be yanked, just based off the fact that there's effective therapies, but based more off the fact that it's dangerous. I mean, to have something this proven to be this dangerous, and I hate to ask for speculation, but everyone's going to be asking, I think, in their head right now, how could this be? I mean, we have good, loving physicians, you know, mostly. Why is this happening? We're a year and a half, 2 years into this. Why is this still happening? What's your speculation on that?
Well, it's amazing that you referenced that 2005 study with SARS-CoV-1 and hydroxychloroquine, but there were multiple MDs around this country who, when they started early on using that mandated treatment of remdesivir in hospitals and ER centers, when they found it wasn't being effective and just even more detrimental, a lot of them switched and actually wanted to know what did they find that was effective against SARS-CoV-1, and they found that 2005 study. So they started using hydroxychloroquine in hospitals, and they all started getting threatened with their jobs, but their patients were actually improving and recovering. But so based on science that was done 15 years earlier, these doctors were using clinical experience and research data to use medications like hydroxychloroquine, and then their livelihoods were threatened, and they were actually eventually lost their jobs. Take Simone Gold from American Frontline Doctors, for example. She's not the only one. There's been a ton of people who have lost their licenses to be able to practice in hospitals because they went against the mandated dangerous remdesivir, unproven remdesivir drug protocol.
And it's interesting that memo you quoted, he specifically said also, don't use hydroxychloroquine. Out of all the drugs to say it's prohibited, he picks that one.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know about this, but Dr. Lee Merritt taught me about this. She's a thoracic surgeon. She taught me why it was Anthony Fauci was allowed to use that conclusion or result for hydroxychloroquine against COVID-19. And then she taught me on an interview I did with her that she goes, did you know why Anthony Fauci could say that? And I said, no, I have no idea. And she said there was an international study conducted in Brazil funded by the NIH early in 2020. And they took patients with COVID-19, positive COVID-19, and they gave them 10 times the recommended daily dose of hydroxychloroquine, which is at 300 milligrams. And they overdosed these people by 10 times the amount of hydroxychloroquine. And when they didn't die, they actually upped it to 12 times the amount of 300 milligrams of hydroxychloroquine. And she said, so what they did was, is they manipulated the dosing and so that you could get to the end result of the conclusion of the study, which simply stated hydroxychloroquine was proven in this study to cause heart failure and death in COVID-19 patients. That's all Anthony Fauci wanted, was a conclusion he could quote, when the truth was, and you know this, you overdose anybody on any drug. In fact, you overdose anybody on water at an extreme level, drinking it can actually kill you and drown you internally. Mm-hmm. So everything has to be in moderation. You cannot do excess toxic amounts, but they actually funded a study that allowed them to kill people internationally. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so this is how they set that up. When hydroxychloroquine at numbers of 300 milligrams or less has been known safe and effective for all humans for 70 years. Yeah. So there's been a lot of criminal activity. I would consider it crimes against humanity and murder. Yeah. That was set up intentionally, this entire narrative, to use remdesivir proven in a study to be deadly. That's not the only study, by the way, that it failed in. There was four human trials leading up to the Ebola trial where it was found to be deadly, and they took it out of the trial. It's just amazing that this thing has continued to recirculate and now be mandated. And just to correct something you said earlier, because people have written into me, they'll go, but you told us that it wasn't FDA approved. It wasn't when the pandemic started. But at the end of October 2020, FDA gave it approval right before they started shipping it out early November to other countries. And this is after 400,000 people had died in America in like 5 months on remdesivir poisoning. So please don't email me or email into this radio station or to Doc here and say it's FDA approved now. It wasn't. And what we're saying is it was never FDA approved before the pandemic because it was proven not safe or effective against any viral infections in any trials it had ever been in.
Yeah.
And it's not effective in this one either. Well, per France, per the World Health Organization, it is not effective. It's dangerous.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And it is eerily similar to the AIDS epidemic, which Fauci was involved in also. I encourage people to go to Bobby Kennedy's website, childrenshealthdefense.org, and you can go back to September 13th. The name of the article is Fauci Botched the AIDS Epidemic So Big Pharma Could Profit. and he's doing it again with COVID. And it's the exact same thing. He's pushing AZT, a known deadly toxic drug, and he's purposefully, this is back in the early 80s, purposefully restricting doctors from using other drugs that have a known safety profile and have known effectiveness on HIV. It's like word for word, like the same script. It's unbelievable.
Anthony Fauci is a huge criminal and has been since the 70s and 80s. And you should read a book by Judy Mikovits. And you just referenced Robert Kennedy Jr. He wrote the foreword for the book.
Yeah.
For Judy, it's called Plague of Corruption. It gets into the history of AIDS research and how Anthony Fauci solely and leading the way made 11 million people worldwide die from AIDS over the next several decades when it could have been prevented.
Yeah, I don't know why he's still walking around as a free man, much less advising anybody, the president or the country. I know Bobby Kennedy's got a book coming out, I think next month, The Real Anthony Fauci. I do recommend Dr. Mikovits' book too, A Plague of Corruption. It's a great book.
It's a fabulous read.
Between that book, Bobby Kennedy's book coming out, the AZT fiasco, the leaked emails, the FISA or the Freedom of Information Act documents that were released a couple weeks ago. It's like, what else is there? I mean, come on.
Can I share something with you and your audience real quick that I just found a couple days ago?
Sure.
There's a group of attorneys right now going after Biden and after Fauci, and it's all around Remdesivir. And so we're giving them all kinds of data, all kinds of research. Lots of whistleblowers from hospitals, nurses, administrators have reached out to the group of us, which is great. It's finally catching on, and everybody's now able to see that somebody's saying, me providing all this information about what the drug's been proven to do in research studies, these people are observing all around the country and reporting. But what I found the other day was I was shocked. You know, how many doctors do we hear are telling patients of loved ones who are now learning about remdesivir's poison, seeing it happening to their loved ones in ICUs, and they're pleading with the medical doctors to change the protocol. Please stop treating my loved one with remdesivir. Please use ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. And it's amazing all the docs around the country still say ivermectin is not proven safe or effective. Or is it approved for COVID-19 treatment? And this is what they say. It's not approved. I'm not using it. It's not shown any benefit. And I found this on Monday morning, actually, of this week. I just happened to be on NIH.gov's website. And if your audience is paying attention, this is being recorded, or you want to share it, I had to call Thomas Renz, the attorney out of Ohio, who's got a group of attorneys, like 10 to 20 of them that they're working on now to go against Biden and Fauci. And I called him and I said, have you seen this document? He goes, I've never even heard of it. And I said, you've got to get it. So all doctors that are saying there's no approval, no review, no ivermectin can be used. No, we're not doing that. Can't use it. If you type in any Google search engine or DuckDuckGo engine, doesn't matter, search engine. And you can do it now if you're sitting in front of a computer. But if you type in NIH, and then the words table, two, the number two, lowercase e, period, table 2e. The title of this chart is on NIH's website. You know, type this into characteristics of antiviral agents that are approved or under evaluation for the treatment of COVID-19. When you type that in, a link's going to pop up at the top. Just click it and then scroll up on the page. The title, remember, is Table 2E, period, characteristics of antiviral agents that are approved or under evaluation for the treatment of COVID-19. When you scroll up on that page, there's a table, and in the middle of the table says, click this button to open the table or graphic. And when it opens it up, there's this chart that you're staring at, and it's titled with what I just read to you. This actual table is on NIH.gov's website, and it was last updated July 8th of this year, 2021. The very first drug listed, to no one's surprise, is remdesivir, and it gives you the recommended doses for remdesivir. Guess what, Dr. Edwards, is the second drug on this table?
I bet it's ivermectin.
It's ivermectin, and it gives you the dosage for adults. It says ivermectin for adults. The dose most commonly used in clinical trials is ivermectin 0.2 to 0.6 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, given as a single dose or as a once daily dose for up to 5 days. Now, what's amazing about this is I've been telling everybody about this. Dr. Ryan Cole had no idea this existed. I called Thomas Renz. He didn't know it existed. I'm telling you now. Yeah, I bet you didn't know it existed.
No.
But I'm actually telling everybody, you got to print out this chart. And when your doctor goes, no, ivermectin is not approved, it's not even considered for COVID-19, it's on NIH's website. You just have to go dig it to go find it. Now, I actually gave you guys how to find it directly, but it's really hard if you just go into NIH.gov and start looking. It's very difficult to find it. But it's very easy to find it if you put in the title. So anyway, everybody should print this out. And when you go, my loved ones, I want you to take them off remdesivir. It's proven dangerous. I heard Dr. Artis, Dr. Edwards talking about this. You hand them this chart and go, it's right here. Use ivermectin. It's on NIH's website. And I mean, what are they going to argue? What are they going to do? They're going to go, oh, it even has doses on here. Now, I do want to clarify something for all of your audience. The mass media has done a great job of trying to convince the entire world that this is just ivermectin, is just a horse dewormer or animal deworming parasite. I just want you to know, in 2015, ivermectin won the Nobel Prize for curing multiple human diseases, not animal diseases, human diseases. And go look that up. On this chart on NIH.gov's website, where it's titled Characteristics of Antiviral Agents That Are Approved or Under Evaluation for the Treatment of COVID-19, it does not say Characteristics of Antiviral Agents That Are Approved or Under Evaluation for the Treatment of COVID-19 in Animals or Horses. This is for humans, and it says human adult dosages for ivermectin with COVID-19. So I want to make sure your audience is aware they're lying to you that ivermectin is just for horses and animals. It is not. It is effective in animals also. And what's amazing is we do drug trials on little animals called mice to determine what's the weight ratios that don't kill the mice, so we can start doing it on humans and using it in humans. Every drug we've ever given to a human was put in animals first to determine what's the safety dose for them that we can give to animals. It's amazing that they're trying to make this look like a dangerous drug that's only for animals. Yeah. It's actually used in both animals and humans. Right. And it has been extremely successful and safe. Only 12 serious adverse events, not deaths, serious adverse events reported worldwide in 40 years, 4.4 billion doses. Aspirin and Tylenol don't even have that record.
Yeah.
People die from Tylenol, internal bleeding, 3,000 people a year in America. Ivermectin's never done that, ever. Yeah. So please don't trust everything you hear in the media.
For sure. You know, there was that doctor in Oklahoma this a week or so ago who came out and said they were overrun with overdose victims from ivermectin. Of course, that was debunked and it was a complete fabrication.
Oh, yeah. Consumers, people that are buying the ivermectin are not calling poison control. Urgent care centers or doctors in hospitals, if they ask an individual what they've tried, if they say ivermectin, they'll go, where'd you get it? And if they say at a tractor supply store or feed store, they then themselves are being told to call poison control. This is the healthcare professionals, not the people taking the medication. Yeah. And then they turn around and tell you they're supposed to tell the patient they took 10 times the lethal human dose. That's a horse dose. No, it isn't. It's actually set up per the dosing on those products is for the weight of the animal or the human. You're a mammal just like they are. So it's set up based on percentages of weight.
Well, I want to quote this real quick. Dr. Pierre Corey, FLCC.net. Guys, if y'all need a protocol to hand to your doctor also, you hand them that paper that Dr. Artis just mentioned that ivermectin is, on the NIH website to say it can be used. But then go to Pierre Corey and Dr. Paul Merrick, FLCC.net. Click on protocols, hospital protocol. You'll get a multi-drug sequence, and ivermectin's a part of that. But here's Pierre Corey. This was from a couple weeks ago, I think on Twitter. Attorney Ralph Larigio has gone to court to force hospitals to give ivermectin to ventilated patients 12 times. He won court orders 11 out of those 12 times. 9 of those patients are now home, and the 10th is rapidly improving on ivermectin. And he went on to say, I guess this country needs more lawyers and less doctors. And unfortunately, I would have to agree with that at this point. Based off the number of emails and calls that I get and our office gets, what do we do? What do we do? How can you got to help us. You got to help us. We're in the hospital stuck. And basically all I can do is send them that protocol and advise them to get an attorney. It's unbelievable where we're at right now.
It is unbelievable is the word. Tragic and I think criminal.
Yeah, I would agree. And then the AMA sends out a bulletin last week basically saying, doctors, you better not be using ivermectin. I mean, it's just like in your face corrupt. They're not even, you know, trying to hide it anymore. And I've got to get this one last thing in, Dr. Artis.
Sure.
We can go another 5 to 10 minutes. I was given a presentation a couple weeks ago in Abilene, Texas. I had some nurses come up after the presentation, and they asked me, what do you know about this bulletin that got sent out to our hospital? It was basically a warning that you're going to start seeing children age 5 and up, 5 to 11, I think is what they said, coming in with polio-like symptoms, acute flaccid paralysis. There's no cure for it. Physical therapy is the only thing you'll be able to do. And get ready. It'll start to hit September, October, you know, through November, maybe. I forget exactly. But basically, it was a warning.
That's right.
Here's what's coming. Get ready. There's nothing you can do about it except physical therapy. And I'd not seen that. I don't work in a hospital. No one had made me aware of that. But a few days later, someone sent me a video from you explaining that. So I know it. I mean, this could be a long story, too. But in the next, 7-8 minutes, please share with our audience what you found as you started to dig into this memo that was sent out.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it, actually. And somebody in our MFD group, the MyFreeDoctor.com group, had posted this article in the Florida Star that was like August 20th. And it said the CDC puts out warning that from August till the end of November, hospitals are being warned that there's going to be this polio-like illness in children average age 5 years old between now and November. And it's happened every even numbered year, 2014, 16, 18, and now it's going to happen. Well, this is marvelous. If you heard that this in Abilene, you said you were at it. It's marvelous if this came to hospitals. Is that true, the story you just told me?
Yeah, I mean, the nurses, they brought it to me. I mean, I don't have any reason not to believe them.
Yeah. Do you have a copy of that or know who that nurse was?
I bet I could find out.
If you can find out, please send that to me by email. Okay, that's number one. All right, so they said that starting in 2014, every even-numbered year starting in 2014, there was this thing they're calling acute flaccid myelitis, or AFM for short. Now let's define that for your audience. Acute means sudden, like right now. Acute means it's really fast, really now. Flaccid means you got no ability to move it. It's just kind of dead, your arms, your legs. And then myelitis means pain, tingling inside muscles. So they got pain, inflammation, tingling. So this is what they said. They were warning all the hospitals in the country that when you see paralyzed children, legs, arms paralyzed, half of their faces, some of them will be paralyzed like Bell's palsy. You're going to recognize this as what's called acute flaccid myelitis. And there's been these outbreaks every even numbered year since 2014. We don't know what causes it. It could possibly be linked to a polio virus in the past. Well, polio is not running rampant as far as we know around the United States, but since 2014, there's been this issue. So I decided to go find out, how does the CDC know? Are they prophets and seers? Like, do they see the future? How do they know it's going to happen between August and November of any year before it happens? So I went to the CDC to see acute flaccid myelitis. I want to know what kind of things CDC has published. And I'm not even joking. If you type in on the internet, CDC, acute flaccid, FLCCID, paralysis, PARALYSIS, 2001, and type in the word Philippines. It's going to come up to the very top of the search engine. Click it. You're on the CDC.gov's website, and there's a publication where the CDC in 2001, the title of the article is Acute Flaccid Paralysis of Philippines Children Caused by Polio Derived from Childhood Vaccines. So now I knew the CDC since 2001, that's 20 years ago, has known that there is a connection between the enterovirus called poliovirus inside of vaccines in children that can cause acute flaccid myelitis. So then I was like, well, then what would have happened in 2014 that would have caused an outbreak of this? Was there any new FDA-approved polio shots? I mean, I didn't know. So I went to the FDA.org or .gov and looked up the historical data of all approval dates for vaccines since 2000. And in 2014, they actually approved four brand new polio shots that have three different polios in them, strains of poliovirus. And I was like, man, is that really it? Is that what's doing it? And why would that be showing up now also in this year? So, but the thing is, you got to understand, this is what got me. When the CDC said it happens every year, especially in these even numbered years, from August to November, I knew it couldn't be the polio shots. These polio shots on the CDC's children's schedule is typically around their birth date or the 6 month period between their birth dates. There's only one shot the CDC puts out every year that's actually recommended by the CDC on their own website to be given between August and the last week of October, which fits that 4 month window of time every year they're quoting. And do you know what shot that is?
I bet I could guess.
It's the flu shots. Mm-hmm. So then I wanted to go and see, well, is there any relationship to flu shots being given in that 3 month window of time? And paralyzed arms and limbs. Did you know the number one serious adverse event or side effect reported to the CDC, to our federal government and VARs, for every flu shot since they've started is a condition called Guillain-Barré syndrome? Guillain-Barré syndrome, for everyone in the world, when I start talking about this, I always say, just picture polio. And actually, what did CDC said? CDC said, look out for this polio-like illness in children. Call it acute flaccid myelitis, all you hospitals. Well, acute flaccid myelitis. Guillain-Barré syndrome. It's paralyzed limbs, paralyzed legs. You can't walk, paralyzed arms. You can also have half your face paralyzed, like in acute flaccid myelitis, but not every time. Acute flaccid myelitis could be paralyzed legs, arms, and half of your faces, but half of your face isn't required. Just some people are going to have that. But paralyzed limbs is in both of them. And if you read their definitions, they're almost identical. So we know the flu shots are there. So then I wanted to go back and look at the historical dates of when did the FDA approve, or CDC approve, it's actually the FDA, approve any new flu shots that had known side effects of Guillain-Barré syndrome in 2014. Well, I found there was two brand new shots introduced in 2013 and FDA approved that then were given lot distributions throughout America in 2014 when you saw the first big outbreak of 110 kids in the country who were paralyzed. Hmm. Now, the CDC also lied when they said this is a warning because it's only happened in even numbered years. No, it isn't. If you go to cdc.gov and type in acute flaccid myelitis or AFM, and then look at case outbreaks, there's a little tab, case outbreaks. They actually listed 2014 is the first year. Then they have the numbers for 2015 and 2016 and 17 and 18, 19 and 20. This happened in every year. Just happens they chose to announce the even number years as they had the higher numbers than the odd number years. So it's happened every year, just not in the same numbers as those years. Yeah. Well, then what I did is, now that I know there's these flu shots that have been approved between 2014 and 2020, there have been a total of five new flu shots that have been awarded approval to children. Okay? To children. All five of them have side effects of Guillain-Barré syndrome or paralyzed limbs. Now, the CDC is saying it's going to happen between August and November of this year. And every year since 2014, now we know it's happened. This is the flu shot season. And then I was like, this is so weird. They already know this is going to happen. Why did they announce in 2020 this was going to be the biggest outbreak year, which was last year? This is what the CDC said. This is going to be the largest outbreak year. Those five shots over the last 6 years that have been given FDA approval for children, they awarded all five of those companies the largest lots to be distributed in 2020. To be used as flu shots in America. Some of them were triple the numbers they'd ever been awarded before, but all five had record lot numbers purchased by our CDC and FDA to disperse throughout the country. Now, what's amazing is that in 2020, there's the least number of acute flaccid myelitis children in this country. Do you want to know why? Nobody got flu shots last year. It was COVID-19. It's this year you're going to have to worry about, because now they're trying to push flu shots and the COVID-19 shot to children. And I just want you to know, and your audience needs to hear this, the acute flaccid myelitis is the incorrect diagnosis. The CDC is pumping this out into the media starting last year because they want hospitals, when they see paralyzed children, they want them to call it something other than Guillain-Barré syndrome, which the doctors and the nurses already will recognize. So they want paralyzed children being brought into hospitals right away. They're trying to tell them up front, this is about to happen over the next 4 months. Y'all be ready, but y'all call it acute flaccid myelitis. The reason why they want them to do that is because they don't want them writing down Guillain-Barré syndrome. Why? Because Guillain-Barré syndrome has already been linked for decades to flu shots causing Guillain-Barré syndrome. There's a second, though, bigger problem I have and a bigger concern I have. The FDA put out a document in October 2020 before the COVID-19 shots came out in December. And on slide 16 of their 25-slide presentation, it was all about what are going to be the coming side effects from the COVID-19 shots reported to the government. It's an FDA document. On slide 16, the very first side effect listed as possible serious events to be reported to the government from these coming COVID-19 shots. You know what the very first one is, Doc?
Guillain-Barré.
Guillain-Barré syndrome. Mm. Now, Pfizer this summer asked the FDA. It's already been in publications. I have the articles from the news in a presentation. Pfizer is asking for approval from the FDA in September or October of this year, which is right in the middle of the time frame of August to November when they warn about this acute flaccid paralysis polio-like issue in children. And Pfizer asked for FDA approval in September and October for 5 to 11-year-old children in America. What's the average age they see of paralyzed children from this acute flaccid myelitis / Guillain-Barré syndrome? 5 years old. We know flu shots cause and can cause within 6 weeks of the flu shots Guillain-Barré syndrome in a percentage of children. The COVID shots, they list Guillain-Barré syndrome as the first serious side effect they know is going to be reported from these shots. And if they start this winter and fall, or the next 3 months, if they get their way and approve the combination of flu shots and COVID-19 shots, you are going to see a huge outbreak of polio-like symptoms in children. But call it what it is. It's damaged spinal cord, central nervous system of children, paralyzing their arms and legs. The most disgusting part of this is they do state that there is no cure, you just have to start physical therapy right away. And some people, 60% of children will recover within 1 year with aggressive physical therapy. That means 40% are gonna have it for life. Permanent disability for life. I am not okay with those odds. Everyone needs to be aware that Guillain-Barré syndrome and acute flaccid myelitis, and I have to tell you this, I know we're probably out of time, but your audience needs to hear this. Somebody from USA Today contacted me 2 days ago and wanted to fact check me on this stuff. And I sent them 3 emails of all kinds of documents from the CDC, the FDA, and the side effects of every flu shot that lists Guillain-Barré syndrome, paralysis of limbs and arms and legs. And then COVID-19, number one side effect listed on the FDA documents is Guillain-Barré syndrome. Then I sent the definitions to them so they could see acute flaccid myelitis and Guillain-Barré syndrome are identical in definition. Then I sent them the Lancet's research review and study on acute flaccid myelitis. And in the very top paragraph, it says there is no single medical test that can actually test and confirm acute flaccid myelitis, which means there's no way medically to test whether or not it's acute flaccid myelitis or Guillain-Barré syndrome. They said you cannot differentiate it in a medical test from other neurological diseases like Guillain-Barré syndrome. So I forwarded that to her so that she knew. There's no way beyond observation to be able to decipher somehow that acute flaccid myelitis, paralyzed limbs, arms, and legs, and half your faces in children, isn't Guillain-Barré syndrome or some other neurological disease. We already know this. You cannot figure it out under a microscope. You can't figure it out from some diagnostic testing. They are identical. The CDC put out the warning in the media. There's only one reason why they would have done this. They've known since 2001 what causes paralyzed limbs and legs in children. And it comes from things in the childhood shots. And if they extend these shots, COVID-19, I mean, imagine this. Every year, they're supposed to be, in the first 5 years of life for all children in America, they're supposed to get either 4 or 5 doses of poliovirus vaccines by the age of 5. Imagine this year, there's going to be kids getting, by 5 years old, their 5th dose or 4th dose of poliovirus vaccines that we know could cause acute flaccid paralysis per the CDC. Now they're going to throw the flu shot at them. There's 5 of them that we know have this side effect. I can already prove it with all of our studies and documents from the CDC. And then there's a 3rd shot, COVID-19, that they could all get. If we see a huge amount and surge of paralyzed children, I'm going to be so disheartened and disgusted because the government's already known since 2001 what causes this in children. Yeah. Anyway, it's awful. It makes me sick. I have 5 children. I don't vaccinate them. 4 of them are teenagers now, but there's no way I would want to play Russian roulette with my child's rest of his life.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Actually, it is believable. I mean, the corruption that's been put on display, I mean, more on a daily basis, it's just so much is coming out. And I want to just encourage the listeners that, you know, I think God's shaking everything that can be shaken. And that's what we're seeing right now. And it is just in our face. And I think I've said this before on the show, the only way out of this is confession and repentance. We've got to fess up. We've got to admit where we screwed up. We got it wrong. We messed up. I'm sorry. We were trying our best, but we messed up. I haven't heard a single confession like that from anything, whether it be, you know, that this virus came from a lab and we were sort of trying to manipulate to do something beneficial, but accidentally, not even that. Oh, to the masks, to the lockdowns, I'm sorry we shut it down all your businesses for no good reason because none of that benefit. There's been no confession anywhere, nor repentance. So my last piece for the listeners is, if you've submitted to the spirit of fear, confess that and repent and go back to God. God's sovereign. He's in charge. He's allowing these things to happen for a purpose and a reason. His ways are higher than our ways. We don't understand it fully, but we can trust him. So y'all be encouraged. God wins in the end. This corruption's being brought forth to the light, I think, so more and more people can turn back to God. We've put our hope, faith, trust, and salvation into science, doctors, and systems of the world. So if you've done that, confess, repent, go the other way. To God be the glory. It's going to be all right, everybody. This corruption makes you sick, but in the end, the truth will win and love will win. So y'all hang in there and be encouraged. Dr. Brian Artis, thedrartisshow.com. That's ARDIS, thedrartisshow.com. Y'all go check those documents out that he was referring to. Dr. Artis, any final word? Thank you very much for being with us today. A wealth of information benefiting so many people. I think you're just going to, I mean, so many eyes are being opened and in good part to the work you're doing and so many others like you out there that are fighting the good fight. Thank you for doing it.
Well, I really appreciate the time and to have any audience or listen. I've told people for years, if there was just one person listening that I could bring hope, inspiration, and logical education to that can help them make better decisions on behalf of themselves or their loved ones, the time's worth it. So Amen. I appreciate the opportunity and you're right. We have to stand for each other and stand up for our own rights and our liberties and continue to pray. Yeah. And educate and share. So lastly, if you really did have a nurse show you that document from a hospital, yeah. I'm actually setting up a whole presentation on this. I would love to have access to something like that. That'd be brilliant. I would love it.
I will try to track that down and I'll contact you for sure.
That would be great. Thank you, buddy.
You bet. All right. That's Dr. Brian Artis, thedrartisshow.com. Everybody check it out. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the cure. We'll be back next week for another great show. Thank you all for listening. Bye-bye.